Before the episode begins, I'd like to tell you about the Science for Care podcast. Science for Care is an audio series produced by HealthTech for Care, an endowment fund committed to support and promote access to care for all patients. Each episode takes a concise look at some of the major advances in medicine, mRNA vaccines, antibiotics, gene therapy, the metaverse, and many more. The production is meticulous, the narration captivating, and the guests are true leaders in their respective fields. If you listen to Impulse, then you'll be for sure interested, so don't wait any longer and go listen to the first two seasons of Science for Care.
The wonder or the superpower of the next generation of neurotechnology is that it's going to be a prosthesis like we have now for the hips or for the heart or for, you know, any part of the body, but it's going to be a smart piece that is going to help us also on our empowerment when it comes to managing our disease and, you know, continue with our lives. So I just think that it's going to be so useful having this technology giving us back data about how we're feeling and how we could actually have that next step on our own management of the disease without relying all the time on the anxiety of not having our neurologist, our neurosurgeon, or our medical team nearby.
Welcome to Impulse, the podcast where we dive into the most exciting breakthroughs in healthcare of our time. In each episode, I sit down with some of the most brilliant minds that are using technology to rethink the way we care. Inspiring and passionate to tell you all about their innovation and how it will impact the lives of millions. My name is Matthew Chafford. I'm a biomedical engineer and medical technology enthusiast. And in this podcast, we take the pulse of this incredible field. Welcome to Impulse. So welcome to Impulse, Carola. Thank you for accepting my invitation and for finding some time within your busy schedule. We have a topic for today that's been at the center of media coverage over the past weeks. We are recording this in February 2024. So there's been some major progress in the field, and I'm talking here about brain-computer interfaces. So Neuralink, one of the many companies from Mr. Musk, for those who have not heard of it, they showed a few days ago that they had successfully implanted their first human patient with their technology, which will be used in general to record motion-related thoughts in the cerebral cortex. So I'm very much external to the field. I observe that there is a lot of speculation and fantasy almost about how these technologies could be used and for what purposes. It feeds for sure an incredible amount of hope in certain medical areas, notably in motor rehabilitation. We talked on the podcast with Dr. Jocelyn Block in episode 6. So wonderful neurosurgeon, whom you might actually know in the area of Lausanne. And one aim, you know, from my perspective for our conversation today would be to demystify, you know, the noise that's created around BCIs or brain-computer interfaces, understand where the field is at, where it's going, and learn about, you know, what can be expected of it and whatnot. So I'm looking forward to hearing your perspective on all these things, Carola, as you and your team at InBrain Neuroelectronics are spearheading the field and are literally in the midst of the action. But before we go there, I would invite you first to present yourself.
Thank you, Matthew. It's just a pleasure to come to Impulse today. My name is Carolina Aguilar. They all call me Carola, as you already did. And I'm a pharmacist and a neuroscientist. But mainly working on business and market development all my life in international scopes. So pleasure.
Thanks. And so tell us a bit about, you know, what the mission of InBrain Neuroelectronics is before we go into the specifics of computer interfaces.
InBrain Neuroelectronics is a company at the intersection of medtech, digital health, and deep tech that uses graphene to decode neural signals into breakthrough medical solutions. We do so by looking at the brain in high resolution so we can help the mankind solving the neural challenge.
And so you mentioned graphene. What is particular with that material?
Why graphene? So graphene is carbon. It's a bidimensional material. It's a Nobel Prize winner material. Two researchers isolated at the beginning of the 2000s, and in 2010, these researchers got the Nobel Prize. Is the thinnest material known to man. It's just an atom thick, yet is about 200 times stronger than steel, and it's very flexible, biocompatible, and it's an excellent conductor. So it makes an excellent candidate as well for neurotechnology.
And so basically at InBrain Neuroelectronics, you're approaching brain-computer interfaces from a new, like the new technology you're providing enables better like sensing of the neural signals, a better stimulation. Like what does it change compared to what other companies are doing actually?
So we have two graphene technologies, but both enable high density and high resolution. So pretty much in terms of density, we can go to extremely small contacts of about, well, I mean, we can go to any size, but to make them actionable, we start at 25 micrometers. So between 25 micrometers to, let's say, 300 micrometers, this is the sizes that we are now most used in. So there's this density in a very micrometric fashion that we can use. We can go up to 1,024 contacts, but it's also the resolution. At the end, graphene can inject 200 times more charge than platinum and iridium at a very low impedance. So the signal-to-noise ratio is extremely good. And also we have this other technology that allow us to see frequency bands below 0.1 hertz, so things that metals mainly cannot see. So we can go from minus 0.1 hertz to kilohertz. And so all the spectrum of frequency bands that the brain uses to communicate is what we are aiming to decode.
And so this has the potential to be used in any, basically in any brain computer interfaces, right? It's like you basically provide a platform that enables to increase the resolution of the signals and the quality of the of the information to be transferred.
Yeah, and on top of that, typically brain-computer interfaces have been using the decoding side of the interface, right? The reading.
Yeah.
However, when we find therapeutic approaches, it's on the stimulation, and even better on the combination of reading and then responding to that pathological biomarker, for instance, and therefore creating a closed loop. I think to me, that's the ultimate brain-computer interface if we can do it at high resolution, because at the end, decoding is quite limiting. Yes, you can move objects, yes, you can program action, intention, but at the end, therapeutic approaches are really delivered while you stimulate. So I think this is extremely important. And probably expands the concept of BCI technology, which is actually what we want.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's in line with what you were saying, like where is the need actually, you know, coming from for BCIs? Why is it needed? Why couldn't we do without?
Well, and again, it depends on what definition you apply to the world of brain-computer interfaces. But to me, first of all, it's about solving a therapeutic need. It's solving a real health problem. So we don't see at InBrain, we don't see BCI technology in a way that goes and augment healthy people. This is not what we believe on. So first of all, there has to be a medical need. And second, there has to be a plethora of indications that we could improve, right? Because at the end, we are talking about an implant on the brain. We are talking about using public healthcare resources or private healthcare resources, but still resources. And we want to come with a platform that can be applied to a large number of indications with a very strict therapeutic use. And of course, this is a mix between decoding and modulating in our view. But pretty much we are targeting the whole nervous system, central and peripheral. And I think that is also one of the differences that we are, or advantages that we are creating, that we have now demonstration both in central and peripheral nervous system in four different species. So there are very consistent results about the potential that we can drive.
And so what are the first indications where you see InBrain Neuroelectronics playing a role?
Yeah. So this is also a difference that we're also bringing, let's say, from InBrain. We think that going into traditional neuromod applications like Parkinson's disease with high density will actually disrupt very much the outcomes that we can bring, in the sense that, you know, at the end, there is a Parkinsonian market there. There are reimbursement codes. There are already players. There are neurosurgeons trained. There's everything that you need to be successful and to bring the patients the hope that they need. But right now, it's suboptimal because of the technology that is applied. It's low density. So you have 8 to 12 contacts max in platinum and iridium. So also metals that can only see very well a few biomarkers that could relate to pathology. So coming into that market with all the advantage and all the resolution that we can bring is actually why we got FDA breakthrough designation, because we could bring reasonable proof of superiority versus what is out there in open and closed loop, right? So we believe that that is the place to go, because at the end, the pure BCI market, it is on development. There's no reimbursement codes. There's no clinical benchmarking. So there's brilliant people. We call them friendly competitors because they are really wonderful people with wonderful technologies that are developing that market in a very good way alongside the FDA. So we are connected to that. However, we believe that we would like to disrupt first the market that exists while going into that market with proof of concepts that we are already developing on a speech, for instance.
So the first indication would be Parkinson's disease. Would there be like, what would be the kind of like the adjacent ones or the next ones?
We have three indications. We're building in brain like a biotech. It's a bit atypical, but it's the way we thought about it. Still having a very strong focus on the indications that we are developing. So yes, Parkinson's disease is the first one. We have already proof of concept on epilepsy. And the third is a speech impairment.
Could you double click on the point that you mentioned that you're running the company as a biotech company? What were you meaning in that regard?
Yeah, so it's a platform company. So at the end, we have a modular platform. And depending where you position and how you configure this platform, you can address a different indication. At the end, it's about configuring different algorithms and, of course, running different trials. And of course, I'm not minimizing the cost of these trials. However, that's why we are very focused while we are having that look to the future. So we have a main platform that now we apply to Parkinson's disease, but we have also clinical partners that are using some of the components of our platform to actually look at these other indications. And then on top, as you might well know, we have a second company called Innervia that it's a collaboration with Merck. So together, Merck Germany, Darmstadt. So together with them, we are also developing the therapeutic applications on that peripheral nervous system. So each of these endeavors have a team allocated to it with very much of a focused mission. And funding right now is dedicated to the first indication when it comes to a brain. The rest we are doing with non-dilutive. And on the case of Innervia, it's fully funded by Merck. So there is a very focused structure to build in brain, as I said, like a biotech. You know, it's really biotech style.
I understand. And so could you explain us, you know, if we take the example of Parkinson's disease and deep brain stimulation, what are the benefits of increasing the resolution and basically all the advantages you listed from a technical perspective? How does that translate in terms of clinical outcomes? The state of the evidence there?
So we know that the brain communicates like a radio with frequency bands, right? And let's say that metals like platinum and iridium see some of these frequency bands, especially beta bands. And that's why everybody wants to close the loop with beta, because it's a biomarker on the range to 10 to 30 hertz that metals can see very well. However, we have seen that even with predictable biomarkers like beta, There are already publications by some of the big American corporations that see beta only in a percentage of patients, maybe 60% of patients. Mm-hmm. We have been benchmarking our technology with metals, and we're able to see this not only beta, but all the ranges of biomarkers 90 to 100% of the time. So we are sure that from the decoding perspective, we can be a lot more accurate, which means target the pathological biomarkers in a very more precise way, but also deliver the stimulation that is required to correct those biomarkers also in a very precise way, and therefore get a better outcome perspective for those therapies. In epilepsy, there's a Nature paper that we published last year that also shows how we can identify the buildup of seizures at minus 0.1 hertz. So this is like a dam with drops that, you know, start building, and then there is the spilling of the water of the dam. So we can actually see the buildup of these seizure seconds, sometimes minutes before it happens. So we have been able to also prove that we could actually stop the seizure before it happens. So there's a couple of good proof of concept that actually represent the advantage versus metals very clearly.
I understand. And if we go back to the episode 6 I mentioned with Jocelyn Block, so she was explaining to us, you know, the device they're using. So it's like, I think, a 16 electrode patch that they put on the spinal cord. So if you manage to double, triple, or whatever by whatever factor, increase the resolution and the number of actually electrodes you can place on that device, like you just, you know, selectively much better stimulate the patients and restore the walking pattern in the case of their work. So I see that this is like has like a huge potential. Could you explain us, so where is it? Are you guys like, you know, building this on yourselves? How is it like, is the manufacturing happening in-house and so on?
Yeah, so the advantage of the platform, of course, is driven by graphene. So this is the first key advantage. And all the microfabrication is the semiconductor process that we use, that we also made compatible in the sense that, you know, this is a process that has been maturing for the last 8 years under the graphene flagship. And then we further took it to the future commercial stage. We have also de-risked it tremendously in terms of biocompatibility data, etc. But yes, it's something that we do ourselves. We have our manufacturing facility in Barcelona. And then we also manufacture the rest of the components in the sense that we take care of not only the interfaces, but the whole platform. So the whole system architecture and the electronics. And of course, we have partners that help us with assembly and with some of the modules. But all the design and all the development is done in-house.
I see. And how?
Except for the partnerships that we have that I mentioned.
I see. And so for the indication, for example, of Parkinson's disease, how far in the clinical development are you with the company? Or, you know, in other words, when will human patients benefit from the technology?
Yeah. So I'm not going to discuss specific dates, but what I can say is that we have the risk the technology, as I said, and the platform in 4 different species. And the FDA breakthrough designation that we got was part of all that research that we do. And now we are getting ready for first in human there as well. Yeah.
I see. And what are some of the risks that you foresee for, I would say in general, you know, not necessarily just for your specific technology, but risks that you foresee for patients that would adopt, you know, these brain implants. For example, we talked about the first person who got like the Neuralink device. Given the current state of the technology, are there like actual big risks or no risks at all? Because if you ask the general public, like some people freak out about this. Some people are,
So the good news is that we assemble a group of people that have done it before, in the sense that the people that are part of InBrain are coming from Philips already. So in Europe, Philips, I would say, is one of the biggest medtech players. Then after Philips, they created Sapiens Tear Stimulation. It was acquired by Medtronic. So they had that experience as well. Then they stayed in Medtronic for a number of years. So they had had that experience as well. They went to Onward, and we see the great success of Onward. So yes, we're very close to Onward. We think this is a magnificent company in terms of people experience, therapeutic approach. I personally also know Jocelyn Blush from my time in Medtronic. So they had that experience also in Onward, and now they are doing it again in brain. So additionally, many of the technology that we are using beyond graphene is the risk already. So because of that experience, we are able to choose modules that are already the risk without creating further difficulties also for even investors to understand what we are doing, right? So some of the implant platform is based on cochlear technology. Cochlear is much more I think it's the neurotechnology that is most adopted right now in the world, even in babies. So there are some of these components that are already de-risked from that perspective. And of course, graphene is the unknown, I would say, for the public. But as I said, for instance, we are planning for a first in human that is very close. And unlike in the US, most of the first in humans are going through an ethics committee approval, right? And FDA has no intervention unless it's a food platform like Neuralink or Synchron, where of course FDA has to be involved. But in cases like cortical interfaces, first in human, the ethics board can approve that first in human, and it goes ahead and is reported and it continues. Here in Europe, we have to have the ethics approval of that board, but we also have to have the regulatory body intervention. So in our case, MHRA. So we had to build around 200 units and de-risk all that technology from the biocom perspective, from the mechanical, electrical, so meet all the ISOs and get MHRA to give us the green light. So there's a lot of work that have been put into the risk in the technology today.
Yeah.
And of course, much more work that will continue to make sure that long-term all that graphene stability and biocompatibility is warranted. But we are working very diligently into that.
You mentioned at the beginning, that's maybe taking us a bit away from what we're discussing now, but you said like, you would not see, you know, the use of PCIs for augmentation, like for people who are like, you're healthy, you do not justify that. So you basically don't foresee, you know, healthy people like you and me using such types of devices in the next 5 to 10 years, right? It would be more for purely for medical reasons.
It's not our mission. I'm sure that probably will happen. At the end, first of all, there's always a risk benefit. So what is the benefit you are going to get versus the risk that you are incurring to? That's how healthcare works. So the benefit will have to be huge for someone to go brain surgery, I would say. I mean, when there is a disability, you want to get normal. That is worth going through, right?
For sure.
I mean, at least I will get one of these therapies without much thought if I would have a disability. There's no question about that. Also, because I've been 13 years working in Medtronic, and I've seen what is the life-changing that creates in people. So I wouldn't have any hesitation. However, if I'm healthy, first of all, who do I trust to do that surgery? Second, do I have the means to cover for the surgery? Third, what is going to give me in my life? Is it switching on and off the lights of my house enough as to get it? Is it driving a Tesla with my mind? So what are those benefits for me are questionable versus the risk or the hassle, even if it's not such a huge risk, because it's not. It's more about the hassle of getting any surgery, right?
I relate to these points. And do you think in that time frame, 5 to 10 years, there will be, in for the relevant indications, BCIs would be just like a common approach. I mean, it's already used for deep brain stimulation. We talked about it, but I mean, using, for example, your technology specifically, do you think in that time frame this will be democratized?
I think that the wonder or the superpower of the next generation of neurotechnology is that it's going to be a prosthesis like we have now for the hips or for the heart or for, you know, any part of the body. But yeah, it's going to be a smart piece that is going to help us also on our empowerment when it comes to managing our disease and you know, continue with our lives. So I just think that it's going to be so useful having this technology giving us back data about how we're feeling and how we could actually have that next step on our own management of the disease without relying all the time on the anxiety of not having our neurologist, our neurosurgeon, or our medical team nearby. So that's the hope that I have, that what we are creating can create less dependency from the healthcare system, because it's saturated. It cannot hold more, you know, burden.
Yeah, it's already at capacity.
Exactly. So contributing towards minimizing that burden while empowering patients to take care of their own disease in a way that is not also a burden for them, right? But that is practical and balanced, would be extremely beneficial for the future of our healthcare systems, but also of our individuality.
And do you foresee those technologies to be, you know, affordable to most? Because to me, it sounds
absolutely
like these are, yeah.
Yes, why? I mean, and this is our responsibility. I believe in a world where payment is by the outcomes that we deliver. So what is the benefit that we are able to provide to patients first and then to the healthcare system? And actually being compensated by that instead of paying by a system that you don't know what's going to do. Imagine if now, to your point before, we start having people getting brain surgery and, you know, moving objects with their mind. What if they get rid out of that, right? You know, everybody's going to pay for these systems, but what is the benefit we would pay for? You know, if we saturate now the operating rooms by people that want to move objects with their mind, what's going to happen with the rest of people that really need
it? Yeah,
exactly. So I will look at a world where these payments are made by the outcomes and by the benefit that the systems deliver and not by the systems themselves.
And so I imagine you're already in discussion with some of the providers and the payers in the US as to how to make that happen once, you know, your product is going to be commercialized.
Yeah, this is what I've done all my life, also in Medtronic. So I had so many conversations around this. And of course, I also found so many walls. But I also understood that when you can break that wall, when you can actually prove that it works, people enlighten. I mean, I haven't seen any healthcare system around the world, and I've been in many countries, that wouldn't be intrigued about how to make this happen. It's just that in many cases, we were too early or we were not ready. And of course, we have still interdependencies between, you know, data, interoperability, benchmarkings. But this field has actually progressed a lot. And I think that hopefully in the future is the benchmark.
And on that, so the benchmark, for example, in the case of Parkinson's disease, the benchmark would be deep brain stimulation. But in some other indications that, you know, where you would approach the therapy in a completely new way, where there is no basically good standard of care or anything alternative. Like, for example, if you talk about motor rehabilitation, maybe there are like exoskeletons, I don't know, but it's like, there are two categories. Like there's one where it's like an incremental change, maybe the one for DBS. And then you're looking for something even, you know, much, much bigger in a way where you're really like enabling to solve a problem that was not solved at all before.
Yeah, indeed. And this is the case, let's say, of Onward, right?
Yes.
I think that's why it's been making such a great splash. So yes, I mean, that's the mission, right? Improve what is there and then create a space for what it has not been invented, let's say, and from InBrain, we're working on both.
I see. So we covered, you know, you explained us, you know, the reason why InBrain Neurotronics is there, that there is where there is a medical need for BCIs, that's where it makes sense. You explained us how the technology works, who would benefit from it, how you would actually commercialize it with that value-based approach we talked about. You mentioned you were working in Medtronic before joining InBrain Neuroelectronics. What convinced you to make the change? Because you moved from that, I guess they are like the leaders, right, in Parkinson's disease and with the DBS treatment. What convinced you to join InBrain Neuroelectronics?
So before I left Medtronic, I was not longer in neuro, because I actually moved to diabetes. So I was in these value-based healthcare models, digital models for diabetes. I was super, super happy. And it was after 11 years that actually I moved to diabetes, because I thought that I was not aware also what it was being built behind Medtronic. Medtronic is so big and
it's
so exciting that you don't have a lot of time to see what is beyond Medtronic. But at that time, I thought that was it. There were these metals with a neurostimulator on the chest and the cables around the neck. And there was a lot of innovation, but I have to say that it was also going slow. So I was getting impatient at that time, and I thought, okay, if this is it, I'm going to explore other therapies. And that's why diabetes was much closer to the patient, in the sense that it's more like a consumer, it's closer to the consumer world, in the sense that at the end you have a lot more features, all the digitalization, everything is more advanced, let's say, and the customer is really, really activated and really present on the management of that therapies. That's what I liked from diabetes. And that's why I was so excited about it. At that point, there were some questions about these models, right? Value-based healthcare and all that. But I was absolutely convinced that was the way forward. And honestly, there was some unclarity in Medtronic about how things would move forward on that sense. Now I think it's much more clear. But in the meantime, I got a call from an investor in Barcelona, from Joseph Eliu at the Savis, that said, hey, there's these people from InBrain that is coming to pitch InBrain. Do you want to come? I was in the past doing some due diligence for Joe or giving him my input. So it was one of those calls where actually I was in Barcelona. He said, come to the pitch. And I went to the pitch. I was like, wow, this is really new. This is really different, actually.
Yeah.
But I told the guys, well, we need to see customers. And we need to see people I really trust to understand what is the potential of what you have. And we went to see customers in UCL and, you know, in different places in the Netherlands. And people at that time, we looked at those prototypes and said, Carola, you have to make this happen. This changes everything. And this is what convinced me, you know, like seeing the bright light on the eyes of these people that I had been working for so long, that suddenly they were super excited that this was going to change the status quo.
Thanks for sharing that. You know, another thing maybe that's also related to, you know, career development and trajectories, like professional trajectories. So far, you are my fifth female guest on the show, over 27 episodes recorded. So I think it's a way too small number. What would you say to our female listeners who are, you know, eventually aspiring scientists or businesswomen willing to have a career in the biotech or medtech industry? Like, why did you choose that path? Why do you think it's nice? What are some of the limitations, like kind of like your open perspective on this?
Because I think that we're always waiting for the world to change. Let's say, you know, we wish for a world where maybe there's more gender balance. And sometimes we don't realize that it's up to us, that we make it happen, right? So that activating the things that we don't like depends on activating ourselves. So I always have this quote on my LinkedIn, which is the best way to predict the future is to create it. So this is what we are doing. So if you are not happy with something in your life, just make it happen. And if we think that there has to be more women leaders, then let's make them, you know, let's just be one of them. That's my philosophy in life. I always tell people in my company, turn frustration into motivation. Well, I think we have the superpower of just choose, you know, choose the way. We always have a choice, and that was my choice.
It's interesting. I think Daniel Kraft, you might know him. He told me the same on episode 12. Yeah,
oh, no,
he told me exactly the same. So,
okay.
Yeah, no, that's very inspiring. Thank you for sharing that. So we, you know, looking at the time, I think we're shortly, you know, coming to the end of the episode. And I mean, that was super interesting. I really like the, you know, what we discussed about this thing around, you know, having a therapeutic need that justifies PCIs and just all these fantasy. I'm like, when I look at like medias and stuff and people coming up with those crazy ideas of, you know, augmentation and so on. But I share, you know, your point that doesn't really make a lot of sense for me. So yeah, no, thanks a lot for sharing all these things. There's a bunch of recurring questions at the end of each episode I'd like to ask you, Carola. So the first one is for the curious ones listening to us who would like to, you know, learn even more about PCIs, about your technology at InBrain Neuroelectronics. What resources would you recommend them to check out to know more about it?
Yeah. I'm getting such a fan of nature. I'm seeing not only the nature papers that we have now, but I just discovered, because they invited us in Nature Reviews to tell how was the transition from fab to lab. And I didn't know Nature was doing these things. So I realized that Nature is doing a lot more of just really cool scientific papers, and there's a lot to learn from them. So this is one. There's also a numerous of great podcasts, like the one that you are driving, that I think are super worth. Matt Angle has another one from Paradromics that is really great. I also enjoy not only participating, but also listening to many of the guests that he had. And of course, there's so many resources right now because the ecosystem is so exciting. But just these two as an example, and of course, Impulse.
Thank you so much.
Is the one not to miss.
I'll put all the links in the show notes. Thanks so much, Carola. I'm blushing. Can you share with us an anecdote from your work at InBrain that made you realize the impact that you were having on patients' lives? So You mentioned you're about kind of like to get into first in human use, but yeah, if there's anything you can share in that regard already.
Yeah. One thing I really, really thank Medtronic is their patient centricity. We always had patients on Christmas events, patients were, you know, on that Christmas event were given a t-shirt with the name of the people that had created the pacemaker. And there were tears all over the place from the engineers, from the patients. Those were the days that moved me inside within Medtronic to keep waking up in the morning and keep working on real difficult challenges like this one. So I brought that to InBrain, and we've been always surrounded by patients. We have a patient board with Parkinson patients, but also with diabetes patients and diabetes advocates. And different kinds of people. And we had actually patients that are not yet implanted, because we are not in chronic, but patients that probably were implanted with other technologies that came to InBrain to actually meet the people and share their journey. And I always mention Carlos, which is the president of the Parkinsonian Association in one of the areas of Spain, that has a very moving story, you know, where he has three kids and the wife died from cancer, and then he's with his Parkinson, not able to move much, but having to take care now by himself of these three kids. And I was like, okay, Carlos, so what you want us, our platform, to do? And he told me something like, Carola, I want the platform to tell me when I'm going to be good to take my kids to an excursion, you know? And that was the moment where, oh man, you know? And of course, this is all related with the machine learning and artificial intelligence. You know, we, from that day, we've been scratching our heads about what else beyond fixing tremors, let's say, or, you know, fixing some of the cardinal symptoms of the disease, can the platform do to help these people? And well, you know, this is just an example, and I hope to have many more, but this is the reason why we wake up every day.
I'm sure there will be more very soon. And it's interesting, like, I think it's the first time, you know, someone on the show tells me that they set up, or at, let's say at the stage where you are, that already, you know, established a patient, sort of like patient console, and have that close connection to them. I think it's, I can imagine for employees, it's super, it's really, really helpful and huge motivational driver. Thanks a lot for sharing that. So yeah, in every episode, you know, I get a lot of inspiration from all the guests I have the chance to have on the show. And without a doubt, you know, you're no exception in that aspect. There are surely other pioneers in the medical field. We mentioned Matt Engel and some of the other companies operating in a similar field as you do. But if there would be, you know, one or a few you would recommend on the show, who would those be, and why would you recommend them?
Yeah, as I said, I think the field is flourishing. I cannot be more, let's say, inspiring about how everything is developing in Europe, but also in the US. So first of all, I will refer to Europe, right? And I have wonderful colleagues that are developing wonderful technologies, you know, the team from Microsoft. I guess you know them both. Also Seragate, you know, Valint there. There's Luca with Wise. There is Angela with Precisis. I mean, this is a mix of more traditional neuromod, but also BCI. So I'm just mentioning them all because I think they are all wonderful people, you know, aiming to create wonderful technologies. And then, of course, in the US, I mentioned Matt, but of course, Michael Magner from Precision Neuroscience is someone that I met recently, and I was very surprised because he was also such a balanced and humble leader that I was very impressed, not only by the technology, but also by the person. Right? And then, of course, you have superstars, rock stars like Tom Oxley that everybody knows, that also is a great person that probably, you know, bring that magic as well, that and that inspiration that we need in the field to keep on going. So you choose. I gave you a good plethora to choose from.
You put me in contact with all of them now. Let's see. But no, it's, I think, I mean, I'd like on the topic on my list. I mean, the, you know, brain computer interactions, that was one of the first episodes we discussed. We discussed it today, but I hope I can have also like a follow-up conversation with some of these folks going forward. Yeah, but thank you so much, Carola. I learned a ton of things. I think people will really appreciate the exchange. Just for those that are still with us, you know, thank you for dialing in. If you think that the conversation has been useful and you know someone who would benefit from it, please share it with that person. I also continuously receive feedback about the episodes and the podcast, and I'm really, really thankful for that. So please continue to do that. You can subscribe on any streaming platforms. Please leave us also a 5-star review. That would be very appreciated. And you can follow our activities on LinkedIn, the website, the podcast newsletter. And yeah, that's it. See you.
Thank you, Matthew, also for the great work you do to give visibility to the ecosystem and the wonderful people that and scientists and engineers that are behind all these incredible technologies that are for sure going to make a huge difference in people's lives in Europe and also hopefully in the US and around the world. So thank you so much for all the effort on making us a great scientific playlist to go by when we are on planes and trains and cars and all our heavy traveling.
Thank you so much, Carola. I wish you all the best within Brain, and I hope we get to see each other soon in Lausanne or elsewhere.
Oh, I'm sure we'll make that happen. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening and making it all the way to the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. All the notes are available in the episode description. If you liked it, don't hesitate to share it with your relatives, friends, or colleagues, and subscribe to the podcast. I would be extremely grateful if you could leave a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It really helps Impulse move up in the rankings. Feel free to reach out to me by email or through LinkedIn if you want to share your feedback, questions, or suggest potential guests. Thanks a lot, and see you in the next one.